prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors, the podcast where we review underseen horror movies, specifically those with fewer than 1,000 views on Letterboxd. I'm Lance.
And I'm Erica.
And before we dive into the episode, Erica, do you want to fill everybody in on the Horror Gives Back that's coming up next month?
Yeah, so starting next week, we're having our second annual Horror Gives Back Challenge. We have a list of categories, a different one for every day of the month, which Lance and I are going to be following, and a few people that we know are going to as well. But you don't have to follow our list. The idea of Horror Gives Back is that you donate a dollar or more per horror movie that you watch in October. This year, we've actually set up a fundraising page for the Trevor Project, which helps to prevent suicide in LGBTQ youth. So we're really excited to be raising money for a great cause. Again, you don't have to follow our list, but we know a lot of you have your own list put together, or you can follow someone else's list, or just, you know, just watch whatever the hell you want. But so the idea is just to raise money for a great cause. So we hope folks will participate with us, and we'll be posting on socials like the categories daily, maybe giving some suggestions of movies to watch. Lance, are you going to be sharing like your picks daily, or?
Yeah, I'll definitely do it on Twitter.
Okay.
And maybe some posts here and on Instagram. I'll okay. definitely do it all on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll probably be posting some of mine too.
Sweet.
But I've got quite a few for each category, but I'm not going to talk about every single movie.
Yeah. And then
we're going to have a bonus episode where we'll go over all of our picks, but I mean, I've got like, you know, five or six for animals, but I'm only going to talk about one in the episode.
Yeah, I have like mine laid out like I'm preparing for a draft, just everything, you know, up to three picks for each. But yeah, it's always a fun time. And like Erica said, you don't have to go by our list. I know my brother, Cody, he's doing his annual watch and draw and horror. Mm-hmm. So if you follow him, it's Cody Scheibe. He did our Unsung Horrors logo, but you can, you know, combine our list with his. You can follow his list, do some drawing. He shares a lot of the stuff that people participate in. And all we ask is that you donate to the Trevor Project.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited for October. But for right now, I guess this is the last September episode. Mm-hmm. And it's my pick. And I'm excited that we get to chat about the super campy Women in Prison, although it's a mental hospital, horror film called Hellhole from 1985.
Your worst nightmare is a fantasy come true for the doctors of Hellhole.
No, please, doctor!
Oh, you don't want to mess with them.
Hellhole?
Yes, and once they take you to Hellhole, you don't never come back.
What's Hellhole?
Susan, it's very important that you don't ever mention that again.
Well, what is it, damn it?
We put you here, and we'll keep you here until you die.
Double your pleasure. Double your fun. The mud bath with two bloods is better than one.
Captives, stripped naked.
Now, what about her?
I have special plans for this one.
Forced to submit to the ultimate experiment.
But if we keep it under control, maybe we won't have any more failures.
Hellhole. When you're taken here, everything is taken from you. Body.
Oh, goody.
And mind. Be glad you're only watching it and not living it. Hellhole.
I'm particularly excited because it stars one of my favorites, Mary Warrenoff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's a powerhouse, which, you know, we'll definitely talk about.
Yeah.
But before we dive into the cast, so what is Hell Hole about? As usual, we do spoil movies that we talk about on these episodes, but I won't spoil too much in my quick summary. We'll talk about all that stuff when we dive into it. Hell Hole is streaming on Tubi. There's also a Scream Factory Blu-ray out there, and it's sitting at 669 views on Letterboxd. Hell Hole begins with a worried-looking mother cooking dinner when her young daughter Susan walks up talking about hiding some papers, which her mom says that she'll be taking to the police the next morning. As Susan heads upstairs to take a shower, a man named Silk, who is dressed like Rob Halford from Judas Priest, he breaks into the house and attacks her mom, screaming at her to give him the papers, which are apparently damning evidence, including bank statements that could put a Dr. Monroe in jail. She refuses to give this guy the papers, so Silk strangles her to death with a stylish red scarf he's wearing over all that leather. And Susan, out of the shower, watches in terror. Susan runs out of the house, and Silk chases her to a nearby house that's being built, and she falls off the second story. Silk thinks she's dead and leaves the scene, but she actually survived the fall. But she lost her memory from the traumatic experience, and she's institutionalized in a local sanitarium due to her amnesia. Dr. Monroe, the man who hired Silk to get the damaging papers, tells Silk to infiltrate the hospital working as an orderly. As Susan is trying to get accustomed to being a patient there, she learns that the patients and the rejects there are being taken to a place known as Hell Hole. And once you're taken there, you never come back. In Hell Hole, which is an abandoned building just off the hospital, we find out that the evil Dr. Fletcher and Dr. Dane are conducting chemical lobotomies on these women, killing them in the process. There's a character named Ron Stevens, who's an orderly there watching Susan, finds out about Hell Hole and calls out the board of medical examiners to uncover it to shut the place down. But Dr. Fletcher and her staff are able to hide it. And there's a bunch of shenanigans that go on after all this. Susan ends up getting taken to Hell Hole by Dr. Fletcher. And then we kind of have a rushed finale that we'll just talk about in the episode. So Hell Hole was directed by Pierre DeMauro. He only directed three total features. Hell Hole was his only horror film. It was actually his last movie that he directed. His other films are a family drama called Christmas Mountain in 1981, which co-stars Slim Pickens, who plays a character named Murph. I had to throw that out there. Do you know what a Murph is? Have you ever heard of the term Murph?
Isn't that like a wedgie?
Yeah, it's like when, I guess, like your pants, your underwear, like caught in your butt crack.
Yeah.
You know, you just get a Murph by like sitting down. I guess they could come from a wedgie, but.
Okay.
So whenever I see the word Murph, I chuckle.
Yeah.
He also directed a family comedy called Savannah Smiles in 1982. So interesting shift to Hell Hole after those two.
Yeah.
Hell Hole was produced by the Arkoffs, father Samuel Z and son Lou. And Samuel Z. Arkoff is kind of a Roger Corman type producer, jumping all over genres. He and Corman actually produced a lot of films together. Arkoff didn't direct anything, but he produced a ton of movies that everyone's seen, including De Palma's Dress to Kill, the original Amityville Horror, Jack Kills Coffee, starring the beautiful Pam Grier, Cue the Winged Serpent, and I'm just going to list off a couple more of my favorite of his productions. Blackula, the Abominable Dr. Fives, Force 10 from Navarone. And then, like I said, he produced a lot of Roger Corman movies, like pretty much all the Poe-directed movies by Corman. I found this on Wikipedia, but during a 1980s television talk show appearance, Arkoff shared with his viewers his, quote, Arkoff formula, which is which he used for making successful films. It's like a checklist, and it forms an acronym of his last name. And it provides the elements that he thought are considered and necessary for a fun genre film. So A, action, for exciting and entertaining drama. R, revolution, novel or controversial themes and ideas. K is for killing. O is for oratory, notable dialogue and speeches. And F, the first F, is for fantasy, acted out fantasies common to the audience, which one would think like, okay, a lot of sex, like, you know, sexual fantasies. Yeah. But no, the last F is fornication, which is, you know, sex appeal. So good formula there. I guess these elements are in Hellhole.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, okay, there's no T or like or N or like there. I'm like, how is he going to get tits, boobs, nudity, anything like that in there? But yeah, F for fornication. All right.
Yeah. So he definitely had it down. Pretty funny that he came up with that. There is another producer credited for Hellhole, Billy Fine, who only had a few other producing credits, including New Year's Evil in 1980. And one of my favorites, Jamal Fanaka's Penitentiary 2.
Oh.
Which is great. He also produced Chained Heat,
okay.
Another Woman in Prison. And the writer for Chained Heat, Aaron Butler, also wrote Hellhole. So he went by the name Vincent Mongol under his screenplays. Hmm. But yeah, Chained Heat is another Women in Prison movie, obviously, with Linda Blair and John Vernon. John Vernon's the warden, and he does a number on Linda Blair. It's pretty bad. But it's a fun Women in Prison movie.
Yeah. John Vernon, like, as a creep, like, he does that well. I want to say he's also in Curtains, and he's playing, like, a movie producer, and, like, all these women go to this house for a casting call. And it's basically, the house is basically a casting couch.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, he's... Ugh.
Well, he's always... I mean, when he's, like, turned up to 11, it's, yeah, like, the movie rules, but it's, like, it's kind of real feeling, because mm-hmm. there's a rape scene with him and Linda Blair mm-hmm. in Chained Heat, and it's kind of scary to watch. It also has Henry Silva in it, too, which I know.
Well,
love.
Yeah.
And Sybil Danning, she's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Hellhole cinematographer is Stephen L. Posey, who also shot Slumber Party Massacre, the original.
Okay.
And Fanaka's Penitentiary 2 and MMA.
Oh, I love MMA.
MMA, yeah, not MMA, but MMA. Yeah. And my personal favorite Friday the 13th sequel, A New Beginning in 1985.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. And then Jeff Sturges provided the original score. And he doesn't have many film credits, but he did compose a lot of TV episodes, like for Murder, She Wrote, T.J. Hooker, and Walker, Texas Ranger.
Okay.
but this score fucking rocks, I think. It's very, you know, it's 80s, obviously, 1985. So it has the synth, but it also includes like some little shredding guitar moments, some good drum beats. So yeah, I didn't know if you noticed, Erica, but the keyboard melodies are like a mesh of a Nightmare on Elm Street theme. Like the...
It sounded familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even like a little Halloween. Like to me, it sounds like he just pulled his favorite elements from like slashers or horror and made this really cool theme, which plays at the beginning and at the end of the movie, which I wish there was more of.
Mm.
But that's pretty much the crew. The cast, I love this cast. This cast makes this movie, well, you know, but let's just dive in.
Yeah.
First, I got to point out that Robert Zadar is in this. He plays one of the asylum guards named Brad. And we all know Zadar is Matt Cordell and Maniac Cop and the Lustigs.
You know what's weird is like, okay, so this is 84, 85.
Yeah.
His face looks less mutant-like than it normally does. And I don't know if it's the haircut or...
Well, yeah, I don't... Because this... I looked this up, and this is his first feature film.
Okay.
So he's young in it, but I guess he's in his 30s.
Yeah.
I think he's in his mid-30s. But yeah, I noticed that too. And I think it's because he had, what was it called? Cherubism?
Mm-hmm.
Where his jawline... And I don't know if that grows as you go older.
Think, like, once you're... you know, out of your 20s, that stuff like that would change. I don't know enough about.
Yeah, I don't know. Because like Andre the Giant, like he kept kind of like his bones would keep growing and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like I feel like it kind of lasts your whole life. But I don't think you would die from it or anything. But yeah, I noticed that too. He looked like right away. I was like, look how young and handsome he looks. He looks kind of normal.
I mean, handsome is a stretch. But
he's yeah.
Unique looking.
he's got a powerful presence.
There you go. Yeah.
Like as soon as you see him in anything, you're like, oh shit. You know, if you don't know his name, you're like, it's that dude. You know,
yeah.
It's like the Dick Miller thing. Like, oh shit, he's in that too.
Yeah. He's a draw. Like I have watched so much garbage just because his name is attached to it. I watched this one movie called Ying Yang Insane. And I'm going to talk more about that director later. It's
Ying Yang Insane.
Scott Shaw, who...
Any relation?
No.
Scott.
But it's literally Robert Zadar in a car driving around talking to himself.
That's the beginning of a poem.
That's the movie. it's not good, and I don't recommend it. I think I had like some Amazon credits, and I was like, "What's this weird movie?" And I was like, "I want my 99 cents back that I didn't actually pay for." But still,
no, it has Robert Zadar, so it's worth watching, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. this movie, Hellhole, yes, but not right. Yin Yang Insane. No, okay. It is him literally driving around in a car talking to himself. And then there's like another Zadar.
Intrigued, but
oh my God.
There's another car?
No, there's another Zadar.
Another
him. Like it's like him talking to, he's either talking to himself or talking to another physical like of himself. It's weird.
Wow, okay.
It's not good. You're selling. My God. I am not selling it. Please, no one watch that movie, please.
Okay. How many views did it have?
It's anyway. Probably like 5.
All right. That can be a...
No, it is not going to be an episode veto.
Okay. So yeah, Robert Zadar is in it. He actually has some pretty good dialogue and we'll talk about more.
Yeah.
I get some more stuff. Judy Landers plays Susan, the young woman who witnesses her mom being killed, and she gets amnesia. She also has more television credits to her name, more than feature films. She was on The Love Boat. She had an appearance on Alf. Ha! That's my Alf. She was also on Murder, She Wrote, Knight Rider, and just a ton more. As far as acting roles in film, she was in Armed and Dangerous starring John Candy.
I haven't seen it.
I didn't see it either. 1986. And she was the lead in the sci-fi comedy Dr. Alien.
It's a full moon movie, right?
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah,
I mean, just looking at the poster, it seems like it is. I haven't seen it, but it seems interesting.
Mm.
Then we have Ray Sharkey playing Silk, who's the killer. this is his movie, in my opinion. But Sharkey, he actually won a Golden Globe in 1980 for Best Actor in a Movie, Comedy, or Musical. With his performance as Vinnie Vaccari in The Idol Maker.
Okay.
Which I think was about, 50s or like heartthrob singers and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And he was nominated again for Best Actor in 1982 for a movie called The Ordeal of Bill Carney. So he's a great actor. I watched a few of his movies, after I saw him in this, because he kind of blew me away. He was in a movie called Stunts, which he co-stars with Robert Forster in 1977, which is pretty much about, it also has Bruce Glover. They're like the main, they're all three kind of the main stuntmen.
Uh-huh.
It's about like Robert Forster's brother is also a stuntman, but he's killed in the very beginning.
Uh-huh.
He's murdered. And they find out it's kind of like a mystery murder thriller, kind of giallo, where there's a killer who's killing stuntmen and nobody knows why. And I'm trying to figure it out.
Oh, okay.
It was a pretty fun watch. I also watched a movie called The Rain Killer that stars Ray Sharkey. It was fine. He plays the police captain on a murder case. It felt like a Skinamax film with some really kind of cool murders here and there, but there weren't a whole lot of murders. It's like 3 murders spread out.
Okay.
But he tends to play a lot of New York, Brooklyn, Italian characters, which is who he was in real life. He was also in the goofy 80s De Palma comedy called Wise Guys.
I never saw it. Yeah.
I didn't either, with Danny DeVito, Joe Piscopo, Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, hard pass.
Yeah. he was in Cop and a Half starring Burt Reynolds.
It's still hard pass.
What about Sylvester Stallone's Paradise Alley, which he wrote and directed in 1978?
No.
Okay, well, Ray Sharkey's in all those. but like I said, I think he's really captivating. I've read a little bit about him. He struggled with drug addiction his entire acting career, and he passed away at 40 in 1993, so way too young. But the movies I've watched and his filmography is pretty fun, although Erica doesn't think so.
I don't knock it. I appreciate it. I think he's
Cop
great.
And a Half. I mean, come on.
Oh, come on, Lance. Stop it.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, then we have Richard Cox, who plays the orderly Ron Stevens, who's kind of the hero of sorts.
Sort of, yeah.
He's taking care of Susan in the mental hospital, and he's trying to kind of shut down this place undercover. He played Stuart Richards in William Friedkin's Cruising, 1980.
Right, yeah.
And he was in Oliver Stone's Seizure, 1974. And he starred alongside another one of my favorite actresses, Virginia Madsen, in Zombie High in 1987, which I've had that in my watch list, but I haven't watched it yet.
You know who he looks like?
Who?
You guessed it. Frank Stallone.
Yeah, I can see that.
And the British Sunday Times is reporting that Belgian doctors have accidentally cloned a human being. The human being, you guessed it, Frank Stallone.
R.I.P. Norm MacDonald.
As soon as you said that, I thought of Norm MacDonald. I was like, are we going to start talking about that? That's funny. I could see that. There was an interview with Mary Warnoff that I was watching that she's talking about Hell Hole. Mm-hmm. And she was bringing up Richard Cox, and she's like, oh, poor Richard. Like, whenever she talked about him in Hell Hole, she's like, poor Richard Cox. Like, basically, like, he had a shitty role and it just wasn't good. And he's like, he's so good in Cruising. Poor Richard Cox that he was in this movie.
You know, kind of.
I felt bad. I thought he was great in it, though. He's really into it, as is everybody. Okay, next. This is a good one. Marjo Gortner.
Mm-hmm.
So he plays Dr. Miles Dane, who's kind of the assistant to Mary Warnoff's Dr. Fletcher character. And he's probably best known as the lead character, Acton, in Luigi Cozzi's Star Crash, 1978, and playing Oliver in Mausoleum. But what's fascinating about him as a real-life person, and I know we both just watched this documentary, but he was the world's youngest, and still is, ordained minister and evangelist. He was preaching at the age of 3.5, and he was ordained to conduct marriages at the age of 4. And there's a documentary on Tubi about him that's just called Marjo from 1972, which actually won an Oscar for Best Documentary. And his name, Marjo, is a combination of Mary and Joseph, which is kind of funny. But the tagline of that documentary is, you keep the faith, Marjo keeps the money. So his mother was a flamboyant evangelist who pretty much trained Marjo to act like a crazy evangelist. And it's wild to watch him because there's tons of actual footage of him out there in this documentary, but he's this little kid just conducting these sermons and just hamming it up like most evangelists do. But it's funny to watch him, you know, like at such a young age, just going crazy. His mom would like give him signals to slow down or speed up when he's talking. And whenever he said Jesus, he would raise his arm. Jesus, like Jesus, Lord, I can see it in my face. But he never believed, Marjo in real life never believed he was a miracle child or anything like that. He just loved performing. So he got this film crew together in 1972, when I guess he was in his 20s. And to kind of follow how crazy the world of religion is and how lucrative preaching was. And he treated it as a business. He knew it was kind of bunk. And in the documentary, he explains how all these like Pentecostal preachers have these gimmicks to make money, or what Marjo calls confiscating money from people.
Yeah.
So he's kind of on the side of, you know, obviously he was participating in it. So you can't, you know, I don't know. He was forced into it more or less. It was his whole life, but he didn't believe in it. So it's just fascinating documentary because I agree with a lot of what he says, but not what he's doing.
Right.
Because there's actually scenes of him like pouring just bags, like paper bags full of cash on his hotel bed and like counting these wads of cash that they would get as offerings from these people who, you know, he would say, you know, give some money. If you have money for Jesus, you know, for this message, throw some money in the offering basket, you know. But it's interesting. He thinks his parents made about $3 million from him since he was a child. And they would sew, his mom would sew extra pockets in his little kid's suit to cram money in because they would do $20 to get a kiss from the young preacher, which is just wild. He spoke about wanting to sue his parents when he was 18, but he became kind of a hippie and didn't hold any resentment. So he just let that kind of wash over him. He believed in karma. And he thinks like anything you did bad would come back to you. But it's a great doc. It's on Tubi. You know, just going into how these evangelists build these empires, these fake empires to make money.
I liked it. I do feel like, number one, I was so sick of hearing the word hallelujah after watching
Can I get a hallelujah, hallelujah? Or no, what is another one he said? Say his name. Say Jesus. Say praise Jesus.
Yeah.
Praise Jesus.
It's too much. And I thought it was going to be more like, it does get into sort of like it being an expose side of it, but the way, like, when he's having that discussion with the documentary film crew and explaining to them, like, well, you need to do this and you need to act this way kind of thing.
Right.
I thought at the end there was going to be this one
reveal
and an event involving the crew themselves in a theater to, you know, turn it back onto the participants in the audience. But it was really, it's very heavy on covering the sermons themselves. And I found myself like kind of fast forwarding through a few of them where it just kept going on like, and Jesus. And, you know, I was like, okay, can we get to him? I want to hear him talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause one of the guys said, he was laying all these rules down to the crew, basically, like, you can't smoke. These girls are going to approach you because you're a filmmaker. You got a camera in your hand. They're going to throw yourself at you, you know, but don't get involved with them. You got to cut your hair.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, well, I was hoping I could just wear a wig. And at the very end.
Right.
And I that would have been awesome. But yeah, it goes back to me kind of like not really agreeing with Marjo, because he obviously kept doing this and he was doing this for the money and for the performance aspect. He stopped like immediately after this and started acting. But, that would have been fucking powerful.
Yeah, it's like, if you're going to go out with a bang, you know? And it just, it felt a little lacking in that sense. I was actually kind of surprised that it won Best Documentary, because I just thought it was, okay, and it was it was pretty good, but I was like,
if that was like maybe a new category that they added, or I don't know, or what was out that year.
Maybe. Maybe just had the documentary. It was only up against a documentary about Blowfish or something. Who knows?
It's a short. It's a short runtime. It's worth checking out.
Yeah. But
same with you, Erica. I was kind of fast forwarding a lot of the sermons. They got kind of long.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, the last person of the cast that we're going to cover is the great Mary Warnoff.
Queen.
Cult Queen Mary Warnoff. She plays the evil Dr. Fletcher, the woman responsible and conducting all these crazy chemical lobotomies. And I just love her, but where do we begin?
I mean, that's a whole podcast in and of itself. Well, I think Andy Warhol and...
I think we should start from the beginning. So she was born on
2-hour episode, 8th. Folks.
So she was raised in New York, attended Cornell University as an art student, and she did get into the whole Andy Warhol scene, which is just fascinating in and of itself. Like, she danced in his Exploding Plastic Inevitable, which was Warhol's multimedia presentation of the Velvet Underground, one of the best New York bands out there. She was in Warhol's experimental film Chelsea Girls. And this was interesting, too. I found this on Wikipedia, so I'm just going to say it. She became a fan of the LA punk music scene.
Yeah.
She made an appearance with actor Jack Nance, who's Pete Martell in Twin Peaks. He was also, he's Henry in Eraserhead. He's Eraserhead. Warnoff and Jack Nance were in a suicidal tendencies music video, Institutionalized.
Yeah.
And then they portrayed the parents in the video, and they later reprised these roles in the new song Possessed in 1987 by Suicidal Tendencies. Have you seen this video?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Institutionalized I've seen, but I probably saw that when I was, probably
Headbangers Ball, baby.
Headbangers Ball, Ricky Rackney. We get it. that was really interesting to me. Just goes to prove it adds to her fucking awesomeness.
Yeah. And if, I know we promoted it when it came out, but Lance and I were guests on Anthony's podcast, Cult Movies, and we talked about Rock and Roll High School. It was a really fun episode. So if you guys haven't listened to that, you should definitely check it out, because we talk a lot about Mary Warnoff, of course, in that, but also, you know, the Ramones and gangbangs and pizza.
PJ Souls. So it was a fun episode. But we did bring up, there is a documentary that's currently being made about her called Mary Warnoff, Cult Queen, which has a contribution page like for the filmmakers to complete. Maybe we'll throw it in show notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll throw it in show notes. But yeah, we could talk about Warnoff all day. I mean, like she said, like Erica, you said, she was Principal Togar in Rock and Roll High School. She usually plays like these little character roles in most of her movies, but I think as Togar, it's a big role. Probably another big role, or it's kind of her and Paul Bartel's movie. Mm-hmm. That's Paul Bartel's Eating Raoul from 1982. It's a real dark comedy. Totally recommend it. She was in a ton of Roger Corman produced films, Chopping Mall, Death Race 2000, Hollywood Boulevard, Jackson County, Jail. She's in Lady in Red. She played Raquel Putterman in Terrorvision in 1986. She was in Night of the Comet. She was in The First Warlock.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Nomads, which I recently watched with Pierce Brosnan. Brosnan?
Okay.
There's Full Frontal from Pierce, by the way.
Really?
Yeah. But he has the worst French accent. He plays this French guy, and he ends up dying right away in the beginning. But his spirit kind of possesses this nurse, and this nurse sees his visions of these nomads. They're like these spiritual. It's like not people just kind of roaming around, but they're apparently like these spiritual entities that go into bodies of people. And Mary Warnoff's kind of like the leader of this. There's like this gang kind of corrupting. They never sleep, and they just kind of corrupt this community and start killing people. And Adam Ant plays the lead. Oh. He plays the head guy, and Mary Warnoff's kind of like the main girl in the gang. It's really good just to watch her. But yeah, she's in a ton of fun, goofy movies. She starred in Sugar Cookies in 1973, which Vinegar Syndrome recently released. I picked it up. I watched it. It's good. It's kind of like a lesbian revenge killer thriller.
Oh, okay.
The director of Sugar Cookies is Ted Gershany, and he was married to Mary Warnoff during that time. He actually wrote and co-directed her in Silent Night, Bloody Night as well. So they're divorced now. I have a chance.
Yes.
I do have to point out more recent horror roles, at least in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
It's recent. One of your favorites, uh-oh, Erica, Ty West's.
Oh, God. Fucking
The House of the Devil.
Fuck that movie.
From 2009. I enjoy this movie. Erica hates it.
Because nothing fucking happens in that movie. I'm going to walk like around a house for an hour and 25 minutes, and then the last 5 minutes, something's going to happen.
Yeah, and then Mary Warnoff pops up. Like, come on.
Fine. Fast forward to the last 5 minutes. Fuck that movie. Fuck Ty West movies in general. I hate them all.
Oh, what was one? Okay, yeah.
He did The Innkeepers. That one was fucking dumb, too.
Actually, I've never seen The Innkeepers. That's with Barbara Crampton, right? Is she in it?
I don't remember. I blocked it out. I had the Blu-ray. It came because my ex used to do those like horror packs or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And that came in one of them, and I was like, I'll watch this. And yeah, I was dumb, and so I
threw it out the window.
I either donated or I sold it. I probably donated it. I probably didn't want to like pay for shipping or something. I'm gonna try and be nicer. His movies are not for me. Yeah. No, I hate them. I do.
You just straight up hate them.
Yeah, I do.
Well, I enjoyed The House of the Devil. I think he had a Western, too, that was real goofy with Ethan Hawke and John Travolta. I think it was called, In the Valley of Violence or something. And I actually like that one, too. So I'm kind of on the – I mean, I'm not fully on the Ty West train or anything like that, but I do like a few of his movies.
That Ty West train should go straight into the ocean.
And she's also in another movie that might be one of your favorites. Rob Zombie.
God, fuck off.
The Devil's Rejects. Okay, well, we don't have to get into that. But her last acting role was in this 32-minute short called Frankenstein's Monster's Monster Frankenstein in 2019, starring David Harbour.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this. It's on Netflix. And it's funny. It's really funny.
Yeah, but I don't like horror comedies, so...
Yeah, but it's only 30 minutes. And Mary Warnoff's in it, and she has a lot of...
Okay.
It's kind of like a mockumentary type movie.
Oh, okay.
And she has scenes with Michael Lerner, so it's really funny. They're kind of riffing off each other.
Okay. I don't have Netflix, though, either, so there's that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that might have been the only thing I've watched in the last 5 years. I should probably cancel it. But yeah, and she's written a few books. So she wrote a book called Swimming Underground, My Years in the Warhol Factory, which sounds fascinating. I ordered it.
Okay.
I don't have it yet, but I want to read it. And a few other books called Snake and Blind Love. But yeah, Warnoff, we can, like you said, a whole episode. So I'll stop there, and we'll probably bring up more of her as we talk.
Yeah. All right. We'll get into more of the film after this promo from our network.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal, providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.
Okay, so Hellhole. Yeah, Erica, it's listed as a horror movie, but it's kind of like a women in prison or horror movie. I mean, I think it has way more elements of the women in prison aspect. The horror elements are very few and far between.
Here's the thing is like, yeah, it's got the horror movie label on it. I don't feel it at all. And you know, we cover movies that are horror adjacent, borderline kind of horror. Like, right. Like The Night Visitor is a perfect example. Yeah. That's definitely a thriller movie, but that had this sense of dread to it that made it feel a horror movie. This movie doesn't have that at all. Like, this to me is just a straight women in prison movie with some kills, but other women in prison movies have kills. So just because you have a killer who is stalking somebody, to me does not equal horror movie. And it has elements like the boiler room. Like, that's kind of like a trope in horror movies where it's supposed to be this scary place. And it doesn't feel like that when they're in there. Like, there's no sense of like misdirection or being lost. And they have this other hidden cell block down in the boiler room kind of thing. But that it feels like that was kind of underutilized. Like, if that was more of like a big reveal at the end versus it like showing itself really early in the film. And it's like,
I agree. I mean, I feel like the horror element, I feel like the opening scene was like, okay, this feels like
Felt like a horror movie.
And,
yeah.
And even that original score, like, they were going for it. You could tell, like, at least some sort of horror genre label.
Yeah.
But it never goes to the horror play. Like, first off, there's no gore in this at all.
Right.
There's obviously budget restrictions, and it would have, if it took it, I think it would, and the kills too are very, the kills are not even really kills. They're like, basically it's a syringe being stuck in a head or in the side of the neck that you can tell it's behind the neck. And it's, you know, when Dr. Fletcher, Mary Warnoff, when she is injecting these people, when her and Dane, Marjo, stick these chemicals in these ladies, these inmates in the hellhole, they start kind of convulsing and stuff and shaking real violently. And I'm waiting for, like, you know, like their flesh to start bubbling up and stuff and like vomiting, you know, blood or something. But no, that's it. They shake and they die and then they scream. You know, they're in pain, obviously. So the horror elements, I think, is mainly like the score, which sounds like a horror score, but it's all about women in prison. I mean, there's plenty of naked girls. There's full frontal. There's a lot of shower scenes. There's a lot of fights between the patients.
Yeah.
Attacking nurses and doctors, which is fun stuff. It's good stuff, but it never goes to that level that I feel it just stays pure camp. It doesn't go where I wanted it to.
And especially because, you know, it's a women in prison movie, but it's actually in a mental institution and they're playing it very sort of goofy in a way. Like, all the patients, like, there's no tragedy behind them. They're just, you know, stereotypical mental patients, like the older actress who is, you know, waiting for her Sunset Boulevard, you know, moment kind of thing. And like, it just, it tonally, it just feels like it wants to be a horror movie, but it doesn't know how. And then it puts it in this setting that's like, that would be great for it. Like, if you had some more mystery behind it, but you know everything up front, it's way too early on. There's zero mystery behind it. Yeah. And it's just a matter of like getting to the resolution of her getting out of here and remembering what happened to her. Like, we know what happened.
Yeah.
We know why it happened.
The script and the story and this whole movie, the ending, it's stupid. It's terrible. Like, like you said, they just kind of move it along, like, and throw in like, all right, let's do a girl fight here, you know? And,
It's been 5 minutes since we've had boobs.
Yeah. Let's throw some more of this in here. But yeah, you mentioned that little like underground kind of bunker where the people are like, all these patients and rejects are kind of in these cells, these holding cells, and some of them have glass plate walls for some reason. They're breaking through and stuff. That whole scene felt like a terrible, like in-person, real life, pay to enter haunted house.
Yeah.
Where basically it's just people jumping up at you and yelling in your face while a couple of them play dead in the background.
Right.
You know, that's what I got out of that. I thought it was funny. I thought it was endearing, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, this is bad. This is just not good. So, I mean, the only thing that kept me entertained and loving this movie, I'm going to say it right now, is the cast and the performances. Every character I think are on and honed in. And I think a big reason of that is because I picked up the Scream Factory release.
Okay.
And there's an interview with Mary Warnoff, which is very short, by the way. She pointed out that the director, they had the script and the director allowed her and all the characters and actors to just ad lib. Which I think is what makes these performances so fun, because they had, you know, the characters are kind of established, I'm sure, in the script, like who they are, what they're about. But they allow these actors to just kind of build their own character. And I think they all kind of got into it. And I could see that in a lot of the people.
Yeah, I agree. I think that Mary Warnoff to me is the absolute main draw to this. Like, she is fantastic in this. And Marjo and Robert Zadar. And it's just, it's weird because the 70s were the decade for women in prison movies. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it's out of place. It doesn't feel like a 70s movie.
No, it doesn't.
It's sleazy and exploitative like a women in prison movie is. It like so many things just feel out of place with it. I feel like I haven't said anything nice about this movie yet. I do like it. Shit. But
no, I mean, I think, yeah, you could rip something apart, but still enjoy it. I mean, that's kind of where I'm in this movie as well. And even for the women in prison aspect that it leans harder into, it doesn't go all out like I want it to. Like it's kind of just there.
Yeah.
It's just showing nudity and, you know, what you expect from movies like this, but there's nothing new in it. There's nothing. Yeah. It's just kind of boring. It's like, okay, well, I've seen all this before.
Right. There's one thing I haven't seen before. There's this one scene where they're in the shower and one of the blonde girls who's always, I think she's,
Silk's
girlfriend or something like that. So she's in the shower with her underwear on, where every other woman is completely naked, except she walks in and she's still got her underwear on, which is ridiculous.
Well, she just walked in. I don't know.
You don't walk into a shower with your underwear on. That's not how showers work.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it's in her contract, but there was a sex scene before that with Silk where she's,
And so then the stereotypical lesbian who's like in charge, tough one, comes out and she's like, "That's my girl." And then she like calls her out to go fight her. And then they go into the next room, which looks like they laid out wrestling mats in a locker room. And I'm like, what is this room?
It's the fighting room. It's where they're like, okay, we're going to fight, but let's be careful. Let's lay these mats out.
Yeah.
You know, we don't. And then like one of the nurses show up and they start beating her ass together. Like it's, yeah, that is a funny scene. But like you said, it's the characters, like Mary Warnoff. Mm-hmm. To me, we did discuss this on Anthony's cult movie podcast, where I felt at times, even as her Miss Togar in Rock and Roll High School, she gives me Frankenfurter vibes. Mm-hmm. Tim Curry is Frankenfurter. And I think it's like she does these quick head jerk reactions. Like if you say something, she looks real fast. Mm-hmm. And like it's very like Rocky, or it's very Frankenfurter, like saying, "Oh, Rocky, how could you?" And like just like throwing his head around. And I love her. And she has that when she's first introduced, she's talking. Susan's in her office and she's like, "I'm going to take care of you." And she sits down. And the camera is basically on her torso and she sits down and boom, there's Mary Warnoff as Dr. Fletcher. She has a pearl necklace on. Mm-hmm. She has the heavy eyeshadow, the bright red lipstick and like the kind of stylized, you know, shoulder length hair. And I'm like, it's Frankenfurter. I love it. She gets like this smirk, like, how about that? Like, I'm like, oh my God. Yes. I love everything about it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of lines. I mean, some, like I said, I don't know what's ad-libbed. I don't know what's in the script, but some of her stuff I wrote down. At the very end, she has Susan in the hellhole, and she says, I want you awake for this. I want you awake to hear your brain scream in your head, and you're going to wish you were stillborn. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, I'm feeling this. I'm feeling these. Robert Zadar also had some funny scenes. There's one scene, I guess a couple of times he breaks in, and a couple of the patients are like sniffing glue or stolen drugs.
Yeah.
And he'll take them and snap them and do the drugs himself and like just start laughing hysterically. And he'll be like, listen, the loonies are singing, you know, kind of Dracula style. And, just to even keep going on these characters, Susan's mother in the very beginning, which is one of my favorite scenes when Silk breaks in and murders the mom. She's played by Lynn Borden, who was in Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry, Black Mama, White Mama, Frogs. But she reminded me of Grace. This is going to be another Twin Peaks reference, everybody. Sorry.
Big surprise.
She reminds me of Sarah Palmer, who's played by Grace Zabriskie. And she has this from the very start, she's cooking dinner and she's very jumpy and nervous because she knows she's in trouble because she has these bank statements that people are after her. But she's incredibly emotional. She's reacting to Susan like Sarah Palmer did with Laura. Just powerful stuff. I mean, I think that is my favorite scene of the entire movie is that and her. And I mean, Judy Landers is pretty bad. Yeah. She's the only character that I don't even really have notes on.
I was like, I don't really have anything. The thing about her is when she first pops up, I was like, what have I seen her in before? She looks really familiar but she just has that sort of generic blonde bombshell sort of look to her And when I looked at her filmography, I was like, yeah, I've seen none of these movies.
Right. Yeah. I felt the same way. I was like, what have I seen her in? Because she does have the whole she plays the innocent. Like in the beginning, she's like, mommy, do you want to know where the papers are?
Yeah.
Okay, mommy. And I'm like, okay.
When people still call their parents mommy and daddy after a certain age, I'm like, please fucking stop it.
And I was trying to gauge the age here because, I mean, I'm not going to age shame or Judy Landers, but she looks like she could be her mom's age. Like, I feel like...
Yeah.
But it's established that she's in school, so I'm assuming she's college age in this.
Yeah.
Which also, that kind of threw me off. But it's the movies. I do have to talk about Ray Sharkey. I think you said Dr. Fletcher is your favorite, like Mary Warnock. Ray Sharkey steals this movie. I don't think I'd ever seen him in anything before this, but he gave me, as soon as I saw him as the killer, when he's the killer, he's dressed in leather. It looks so out of place. He looks like the Slumber Party Massacre 2 killer, kind of. But he has really crazy hair, receding hairline, very poofy. He's got this little kind of pencil-thin mustache on, super sleazy. He kind of gave me like skinny, like Joe Spinell vibes.
Yeah, I can see that.
But also I would get, when I started watching his other filmography, he kind of reminded me of, and I don't know if you're a fan of him, but Justin Theroux.
I'm indifferent.
Yeah, that's how I am too. I know he adopts a lot of animals from...
that's why I do Austin, like him for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And even a little bit of Oscar Isaac. Obviously I compare people a lot, but Ray Sharkey really fascinated me because he seems to have a lot of these elements that I like from actors.
Mm-hmm.
And in this performance, he's just so relaxed and naturally sleazy. Like he'll... Like in the sex scenes, it's just like, oh yeah, come on, baby. Come on. What is daddy like? Yeah. You know, take your panties off.
Ooh.
He says that to everybody. He even says it to Susan. Like there's one scene where he captures her and takes her down to the hellhole and she's on like a stretcher strapped in and he flips her up and he's like, hi, sweetheart. Remember me? I just had me laughing. He's like, come on, remember where the papers are. Do it for daddy. I have a feeling like all that's ad-libbed because looking at when I watched his other performances, he's always sleazy. He's always that kind of creepy guy. And he seems completely in the role and selling it. And then there's that mud bath scene too, where he gets.
Oh God. Yeah. Because prison, no, it's not a prison. Mental institutions definitely have mud therapy.
And jacuzzis.
And jacuzzis. All these things.
And Mary Warnoff's like office, there's a jacuzzi.
Yeah.
And that whole scene's odd. Mary Warnoff actually brought that up in the interview. She's mm-hmm. like, you know, I kind of got typecasted because the whole Warhol thing, I played a lot of lesbians. Mm-hmm. And she's all, and I really didn't like doing that because usually the written roles were, they just kind of played around with it. Like the characters weren't actually gay. They just made them like play with, you know, with hooking up with women and stuff. And so there's scenes where Dr. Fletcher kind of, she's evil and plotting the whole time. But again, it's like the movie's like, okay, let's move along. What can we do? Okay, let's do a naked girl jacuzzi scene. So she kind of starts like seducing an a random inmate.
Yeah.
And like getting like really aroused and like, oh, like trying to humanize her or something in some weird way. Just another bad part of the script.
Yeah.
Dr. Monroe, who's the guy who has the bad bank statements, and he's in it just a few times, but he's played by a guy named Martin Beck. And it seems to me like he has Parkinson's disease. I don't know if I should talk about this, but he's shaking the whole time. I'm not sure if it's part of the real character or not, but it works. Like, he's very interesting to watch.
You're going to get this podcast canceled, Lance.
You can cancel that. I do. As I was watching Hell Hole, I felt like it was missing one actor who would have just brought it.
Mm.
And that was Susan Tyrell. Yeah. As soon as I was watching, I was like, I need her in this. And there's that one character that you pointed out that thinks she's a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
When she popped up, I was like, holy shit, is that Susan Tyrell? But no, it's somebody else. But I felt like she was kind of, she should have been pulled in because I would have loved to seen her just pop up.
Yeah.
And I do want to talk about the terrible editing in this movie.
Oh, man.
So there's obviously added dialogue to some scenes
mm-hmm.
where the actors performing aren't even speaking on screen or off screen, but they later add these dialogues. So it sounds really weird. A lot of scenes just end abruptly. So any kind of flow you might be getting into, don't worry, it's not going to last. It's like that mud bath scene.
Yeah.
It's really awkward. It's basically Slick like, get on, get out of here. Cut. And then just like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But the editor was Stephen Butler, and he didn't really have a whole lot of credits, but he did edit Gordon Hessler's Pray for Death.
Which, oh, okay.
I mean, it kind of makes sense because I do remember that thing being super choppy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think we should talk about the terrible ending.
Yeah.
It's just completely rushed. Again, like most of the movie, it doesn't make sense. So, yeah, basically Dr. Fletcher is telling Susan, she gets her into the hellhole and she's basically just telling her everything she's going to do. I'm going to kill you, then I'm going to burn all the papers, mm-hmm. and I'm going to burn this place down and all my failures. And then Sharky pops out and he's dressed again as Rob Halford and he's wearing that same scarf and he starts reciting these nursery rhymes, which apparently he did when he killed the mom.
Yeah.
So this triggers... That's what breaks Susan's memory loss. And she remembers everything after that because she sees him. She sees the scarf.
Mm-hmm.
He starts choking Dr. Fletcher,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, which doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because for a while he's like sexually attracted to her. He talks about that. But then like she's all up in his shit. So he just starts killing her. But he doesn't actually kill her because Dr. Monroe pops out
mm-hmm.
with the gun. And call Susan over. He wants Susan because obviously she has her memory back. He wants to know where the pages are,
mm-hmm.
where the papers are. And Silk flips out and kills Dr. Fletcher or Dr. Monroe.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, okay, wait, I thought everybody was on the same team at this point.
You right.
know, Silk is going rogue, obviously. He's killing whoever the fuck he wants. But yeah. And then Ray Stevens comes in, the orderly. And he saves Susan. They run out.
Marjo then lets out all of the patients in the boiler room cell block. And so then they all converge on Dr. Fletcher.
Yeah.
They didn't show who locked her in. Like she's leaving. Like there's a scene where they're all coming out and she's... she's still the fucking queen. And so she's like
pushing
like,
him away.
She's like,
get
off. Yeah. And like, they're like backing off from her. And I'm like, there's like 20 of you and one of her, but yet she is still such a fucking queen that they're like, yeah, can't fuck with her. But then like the gate in front of her that she's going to walk out of is closed, but they don't show who does that. So I was like, who did that to her? Like, was it Marjo? No, he's dead. Cause she kills Marjo.
She kills Marjo with a piece of broken glass.
Piece of broken glass. Then all the women converge on her and get, maybe it was the prisoner who grabbed the syringe who closed the door on her because she's on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway,
they don't show. Yeah. But yeah. They do show. Yeah. She's the gate shut. They turn her around. They all kind of converge on her and then she gets chemically lobotomized. Mm-hmm. They stick the syringe in her neck. So she's done. Dr. Fletcher's done. Then Silk goes after Susan and Ray Stevens pops up. They start fighting and some random patient pops up behind Silk with an axe.
Yeah.
And kills Silk. And that's how Silk dies, by some unnamed character.
Yeah.
I'm like, who is that? At first I thought, okay, it's Susan.
Yeah, no.
No, Susan's already run outside. She's gone. But it's just some random patient. I'm like, oh, come on. And Silk actually gets it in the back while he's fighting Ray Stevens. And he's like, oh, shit. You know, like, this is how I'm dying. Like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they run out. Ray and Susan run out. They're outside. All the patients are walking around. And Dr. Fletcher comes up to him.
Mm-hmm.
But she's completely out of it. She's had her chemical lobotomy. She's just like, you know, kind of twitching and out of it.
Yeah.
And then they literally just start walking up like a grass hill. And then the credits roll. I think it fades out, too.
It
fades out.
Yeah.
It's super shitty.
Yeah.
It's like, how could you do that to Silk? How could you do that? I mean... I feel like the ending just went on and on. Like the last 30 minutes is the ending.
Yeah.
All this is just dragged out. And they're like, well, we got to kill everybody. Where was Silk again? Yeah. Let's have some girl come up with an axe. And, you know, Dr. Marjo, he's releasing the patients. Let's just have Dr. Fletcher, who's been working with him, you know, just come up and get a piece of broken glass and slash his throat.
Dr. Fletcher, like, you know, she gets a taste of her own medicine or whatever. And maybe it's just me like not wanting that for Mary Warnoff, but I was just like, I don't like that ending for her.
Doesn't she get lobotomized like in Rock and Roll High School kind of at the end? She's in a wheelchair and she's like,
she just snaps like, yeah. But yeah, she's being carted off. So yeah, it's like Queen Mary Warnoff deserves better than this, people.
Yeah. And that is one thing too. Yeah. Dr. Marjo, Dr. Dane, he seems to be really wanting to help people, but yeah, they never really hit on like they say that the testing that they're doing is to rid the people of these bad visions they see and stuff like that. But I'm like, what? Why are you like strapping them down and getting all, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why don't you just present it as that? Like, oh, this is to help you.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay. So yeah. Overall thoughts, Erica, would you recommend this to somebody?
Yes. I mean, just for Mary Warnoff, Marjo, everyone else alone, it's a fucking hot mess, but I still enjoyed it. I gave it 3 stars on Letterboxd. I'm glad I watched it. I don't know that I'll ever revisit it, but yeah, I think if you like women in prison movies, this is kind of that. If you're looking for a horror movie, this movie does not have that. So, but yeah, I would still recommend it.
Yeah, I would too, because of the cast. Like the story is so dumb. The horror elements are weak. They're really not there, but the characters and the performances from the actors, I think are just brilliant. So that reason alone just kept me entertained. And I think that's why I gave it a higher rating than it deserves.
Yeah.
I gave it 3.5 stars. And I would watch it again.
I mean, extra half star for Mary Warnoff, always. Yeah. So.
Well, always a heart on one of her movies. Always a heart. So what about a double feature with Hell Hole?
Yeah, so I wanted to go with another women in prison movie. And so mine is, I'm actually doing a Zadar Zadouble.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
I just came up with that. So my double feature pick is a movie called Run Like Hell from 1995. It's basically, it opens with in the future, 2008.
Yes.
It's post-apocalypse. Single women are considered a threat. So if you're a single woman, like if you're unattached, you are put in prison.
Wow.
Rude. So it's a complete nonsense women in prison movie. Kitchen sink. It's got a ninja for no reason. Some guy, random guy with the chainsaw shows up and fights the ninja. It's got a lot of boobs in it. And Robert Zadar shows up and basically is like watching a screen of women in the prison taking showers or having sex most of the movie. But basically, it's got these four women who break out of prison in their underwear. That's it. Like no top or anything. Like it's boobs. Just four women running around topless for the first 20 minutes or so until they finally get some clothes. And then they're trying to get to like the promised land and they run into the ninja and the ninja's like, I'll help you get to the promised land. And
then, is the ninja like dressed as a ninja?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
With the face covering and everything.
Yeah. But he's got like long hair that's sticking out too. And he eventually takes his mask off and it's a movie that I'm like, if you watch like Red Letter Media, I'm almost positive this was on a best of the worst episode. If I remember like a really old one, if it wasn't and I'm mistaken on that, then it's a movie that would fit into this. So it's hard to recommend it. It's one of those movies that is so ridiculous that you're just kind of, your mouth is agape watching it. So yeah, Zadar is a double. Run Like Hell, 1995.
Nice.
What about you?
Okay, so when it comes to the violence, gore, and like hardcore nudity and sleaze, sex, torture, even the performances, I'm going polar opposite of Hellhole.
Okay.
So bad performances, a lot of gore, a lot of shit. And this is essentially another woman in prison type movie, but it gives you everything you might be missing from Hellhole. My pick is Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS.
Nice, yeah.
1975. So I didn't mention this in the episode, but I'm going to bring it up now. Ilsa is played by Diane Thorne, who plays Krista, who I thought was Susan Tyrell, the actress that's like, you know, let's
go. That's her?
That's her.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So there's that connection right there. She's in Hellhole. She plays, you know, just a very small part, a crazy, crazy patient that thinks she's some famous actress.
Mm-hmm.
But in here, she's in charge of the captive ladies and tortures them kind of in her own hellhole.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you know, the experiments are to prove that women can endure more pain and suffering than men, and they should be allowed to fight on the front lines of war. And her bunker is referred to in the movie as the gateway to hell. The chosen few are taken to a room in her quarters, and the women there never return. So it's a hellhole.
Yeah.
But it's way more brutal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll turn a lot of people off. But using this as a double feature, I think, to Hellhole should satisfy those who, you know, wanted more from that.
Yeah.
If you think Hellhole's too tame or missing that extra punch that kind of pushes it into this is more horror because of the gore, because of what's happening to these women. But it's straight up just exploitation. So yeah, Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS, directed by Don Edmonds. I would watch Hellhole first as a nice little appetizer and then just gorge yourself on that grossness of this. And also if you don't like it, you can just bail on it.
I mean, Hellhole flirts with a common trope of Nazi exploitation movies where they're experimenting on humans.
Right.
So, but yeah, Nazi exploitation movies are not for everyone.
I was kind of hesitant. I mean, first I was thinking because, you know, Silk does remind me of the driller, the guitar killer from Slumber Party Massacre 2, mm-hmm. Deborah Brock. So I thought I was going to pick that. And then I thought, you know, why not Rocky Horror Picture Show? Mm-hmm. Because Warnoff gives those. Dr. Fletcher's very Frankenfurter.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go with something that with some incredible gore.
Yeah. I think that's a smart pick.
Okay. So we're getting into October.
Yeah.
What's your pick?
Yes.
What do you have lined up?
All right. This has been on the list since the beginning of the year. Like when I first watched this, I was like putting this on the list for October. And you'll see why when you watch it. this is interesting that you had Hellhole for this episode, because I actually have a 6 degrees of separation from your movie to my movie. It's less than six, actually. It's 1, 2, 3 degrees of separation. So Robert Sadar in Hellhole is in Ying Yang Insane, directed by Scott Shaw. Scott Shaw also co-directed Frog Warrior, which is one of the Hell Comes to Frog Town
sequels.
Okay. So he co-directed that and numerous other films with Donald Jackson, who is the director of My Pick. So we're probably going to talk about Donald Jackson and both Scott Shaw and their quote unquote Zen filmmaking in this episode. It's they are interesting. And also, this is also kind of a timely pick as well, because, you know, we just had our Bleeding Skull episode and talked a lot about trash horror. This is absolutely trash horror, although it's 1977. So it's not in either of the books. But if they had a 70s trash horror book, it would be in it. So next episode, The Demon Lover, 1977. Don't confuse this with Demon Lover, 1992, starring Robert Sadar.
He's all over the place.
He's all over the place. So, yeah, like I said, this is trash horror, and I don't mean trash isn't bad. I mean low budget. This is a group of teenagers hanging around a cemetery. They get involved with a satanic priest who calls up a demon from hell. This is a, for the first half of the movie, it's a very talky, hangout, taking drugs kind of movie. And it's going to test people's patience. I do that a lot to folks, and I'm sorry. But then it gets wild. There's like a karate fight in a bar, a really overbearing synth score, which Lance, I think you'll dig. And there's a lot more to love, but possibly hate. So what's interesting about this, this is one of the more polarizing movies I've seen from the people that I follow on Letterboxd. Like there's some people who give it 1 star, and then there's some people who gave it 4 stars, or there'll be someone who gave it 1.5 with a heart. So it's like, it's one of these movies. Yeah. So anyway, this is currently streaming on Tubi. And as of this recording, it has 267 views on Letterboxd. So Demon Lover, 1977, directed by Donald Jackson, actually co-directed with Jerry Yunkins. Short runtime, 83 minutes. And it's a good one for October. And I'm going to leave it at that so I don't really spoil anything.
Will it fit into, well, I guess it could fit in any of our categories.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it'll fit into the unsung horrors role.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. It fits into that. It could fit into
70s horror.
Hail Satan, 70s horror. Yeah, there's a few categories it could fit for Horror Gives Back for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, Demon Lover 1977 for the next episode. Don't forget, Horror Gives Back starts next week on October 1st. If you are not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Slasher, and Facebook, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram at Hex Massacre.
You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at L Scheibe. And if you want to visit lanceshibe.bigcartel.com, we have Unsung Horror Pin still there. Remember to use the discount code Unsung Horrors, all one word, all caps. Get 25% off. And thanks to those who have picked up some pins.
Yes.
Lisa, Hunter, Emily, Nathan. Yeah, thanks for that. But yeah, if anybody's interested, do remember that discount code.
We'll also be having a giveaway like we were last year for our Horror Gives Back challenge. So anybody who makes a donation, we'll have a little prize package put together. We'll throw a couple pins in there. Some movies, maybe some artwork. We'll see. We'll see what we got this year, but we will see you next time for The Demon Lover. Night, y'all.
Bye, everybody.
The wind of 30, the match of 6, the same place to be a man. I ain't got no future, I ain't got no past, and I don't think I ever can. The floor is still there.
Hey, it's Death by Video.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kit.
And I'm Graham, saying welcome to our podcast full of merry movie mayhem.
Ever wonder what an Irish kung fu movie would look like?
It's called Fatal Deviation, and we covered it.
Ever wonder what a movie about a thousand cats would look like?
It's called Night of a Thousand Cats, and we covered it.
And it stars Hugo Stiglitz. Listen to Death by Video to hear us discuss and dissect some of the weirdest, wildest, and wackiest films ever made. All this and more on Death by Video!
Woo!